Hello and welcome to Time with Pastor Otable, our interactive discussion program that throws the light of scripture on the biggest issues of our lives. My name is Albert Okran, welcoming you on behalf of Dr. and Mrs. Otable. For the past few weeks, we've been looking at the seasons of life, trying to understand them, looking at seed time and waiting. Today, we land at the big one, harvest time, and it's my joy to welcome leading the discussion, Pastor Mensah Otable. Doc, harvest is big for many people.
Well, that's what we sow the seed for, so that we'll get a harvest.
So there's great expectation for the understanding of what it takes.
Yes, it comes with its own problems as well.
Wow. We'll find out what they are. Let me welcome my colleague first, Pastor Kojo Amuasare. Pastor Kojo, good to see you.
Good to see you, Pastor Albert.
And Pastor Priscilla, Nananketia. Pastor Priscilla, we are set, aren't we?
Yes, I'm set. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. Doc, we have lots of questions today. Let's start with the concept of harvest time. For the benefit of our viewers, what exactly is harvest time and what is the scriptural significance?
Just as it is in agriculture, a harvest time is when the seeds you have sown in the past come into fruition and ripen for and are ready to manifest or to be used. So when we transpose that concept to other areas of our life, it is when something that was done in the past now begins to show results. It could be a good deed that is now beginning to show results, or an investment that is now producing result. Sometimes it could also be something bad that is beginning to show results. So it's that moment when something was started, a time has lapsed for waiting, and now we are beginning to see the results.
Doc, so from your perspective as a theologian, between seed time and harvest time, which of them does the Bible place more emphasis on?
The seed time, because the harvest is conditional to what you have sown. If you didn't sow any seed, there will be no harvest. So we are urged to be very careful about what we sow, because what you sow is what you're going to reap. The reaping is only consequential to the sowing. Although reaping has its own dynamics, we have to be very mindful of what we set into motion for a harvest to result.
Doc, Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 1 says, "Cast your bread upon the waters, and you'll find it after many days." What qualifies as many days, considering that it takes about 3 months for corn to mature, and 3 to 4 years for the palm to mature, and about 20 to 25 years for the teak tree to mature? And can I just ask also, is it possible for you to sow a seed and another generation will reap the harvest?
I think you answered the question. Yes, I mean, many days varies. I mean, and you can't put your finger on these, especially if it is an unpredictable act. And by that I mean if you make an investment and the investment matures in 20 years, you know upfront that this is a 20-year investment, and after 20 years, this is what I'm going to get. However, if you started a business, make the same investment in a business, you cannot predict when the business will take off. Even if you have a project plan and you have done your study and you've done your forecast, and you know when you're breaking even and when you're going to make profit, there are all kinds of circumstances that can come and disrupt your process. So normally you say, all things being equal, this is what you will get. But if you come to acts that are not as defined as an investment, like you do good, when will God reward you for the good you've done? You can't tell when those things happen. So It varies. I mean, some we have control over, some we don't have control over. Mostly the things we do in processes, in business, or you start a church, running a church, running a business, running an institution, you can predictably look at some days or some date when the results will show. But other things you have no control over when the results will show.
I'm interested in what the generation, another generation, reaps.
Yes, I think it's also important for us to be mindful, to be generational, that we don't just do things for our own benefit, but we also do things for other people's benefits. And the other people could be people related to us or people who are not directly related to us. So when we make an effort, we shouldn't just think of how it benefits us in the immediate. Sometimes it's years later. I mean, if you take the case of cocoa in Ghana, which is linked primarily to Tete Kwashi, although there were other efforts by the Presbyterian missionaries and others who had sown the cocoa, we tend to associate him with the cocoa industry. He started somewhere around 1911. And we're still reaping where he sowed. His seeds are not benefiting him, probably not even his family, but a whole nation has built an economy around one man's effort. So sometimes there are things we do which do not come to benefit us directly, but in an altruistic way, benefits people beyond us.
That illustration is profound.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It is.
I met a man who was 80, who spent his retirement money planting a teak plantation. And as he spoke, it just struck me that at the time of planting, he knew that by the time it matured, he wouldn't even be alive. So he probably was thinking of another generation reaping the fruits.
I think if you don't have a generational mindset, at a certain point in your life, you will minimize your effort because you think, I wouldn't even be here to enjoy it. So normally by the time people hit their late years, 60s, they reduce their effort because they think of whether they'll be there when the results of what they're doing shows. But when we think generationally, then even in our old age, 70, 80, you can think of doing things that without considering you as a beneficiary, but probably your family, your children, your grandchildren, but a nation and other group.
Doc, in John chapter 4, 35, Jesus employed his disciples to look at the field because they were fight for harvest. In agriculture, it's very easy to identify when your crop is ready for harvest. But in practical life, are there indicators that can guide an individual to know that you are about entering into your harvest season?
I think you will. If I'm looking at a pastor who starts a church, probably with about 10 people, and he teaches, prays, encourages people, does that for years, and it's still 10 people, 12 people, and then it gets to 8 people, and then it gets to 15, and then it comes to 10, and it continues for 2 years. Then all of a sudden, you begin to see new faces coming in, the people in the church becoming more enthusiastic, inviting friends. So one time you see 10 people, and then it's 20, then it's 25, then you're going to 30. At that time, you would know that the effort you've been putting in for the past 2 years is beginning to show results because you see it in the people coming. So those would be the signs of the harvest. But then when you see that, Jesus says, when you see the sign, then you go in and harvest. That means from then on, your strategy should not just be sowing, but also harvesting. You must have a plan to bring in more people. And the same, I suppose, would be for a business person who spends years doing all the hard work, and all of a sudden, his business takes off. People are recognizing the product is registering. People like the product. At that time, that will be the what I call the sign of the harvest, sign that your effort in the past is paying off. But from then on, you have to be deliberate and intentional in widening the harvest. Because if you just go with the science of the harvest, it will just plateau over a short time.
Is it also an endorsement that your efforts and the strategies end some results, so you can probably continue with that same strategy?
Well, the strategy you use in a sowing season will not be the same as what you use in a harvest season, because when you're sowing, you're dealing with less people. Whereas when you are harvesting, you're dealing with more people. So, for example, if a church is in a small place, that takes 10 people and maximum seating is 20 and 40 people come, what are you going to do? So at that time, you have to have a different strategy. You can't continue doing the same things. You either look for a bigger place or you do double services or three services, you know. So you have to think a little differently from when you were working hard without seeing any results. And many times, you know, people can do very well in a sowing season and be very poor harvesters, because they keep doing the same thing when it's harvest time, whereas that season will call for a different strategy, a different approach.
Doc, let's talk about the strategy for the harvest season a bit more. What kind of posture must the person who is harvesting have? And how important is timing? You mentioned going at once. How critical is timing at harvest time?
I mean, if we take the parable of Jesus, he says, once you see it, once you see the sign, you act. I mean, I can talk about church a bit more because that's my field. I mean, you start a church and sometimes for 2-3 years, it's almost like nothing. You don't see people coming. The people are not consistent. Then all of a sudden, you begin to see people showing more interest. People attending more. The members now invite people to come. People are more enthusiastic. People are serving in the departments of the church. The choir is singing better. You know, there is a sign of life that all these years of laboring is beginning to show life. Now, at that time, you cannot do the same thing you were doing before. I mean, you still do it because you're still sowing for the future. But you have to alter your approach. Sometimes it may even be altering the kinds of messages you preach. Because a message you preach to a few people may not be the same message you preach to a larger group of people. A message you preach to people who are familiar with you and have stayed with you for 2 years may not be the same approach to people who don't know you and have just joined you. You need a different communication strategy for them. And if you miss that, the people may come in and feel unwelcome because you built it for only the 10 you used in the sowing, but not for the 50 who have come in. Your messages probably are a bit unwelcoming, or the people who were in are not welcoming. So the harvest season comes, the strategy doesn't work. And it works with businesses as well, you know, where people work so hard to grow a business. And as the business grows, there's no change. The staff change doesn't take place. They're using the same staff. And you probably realize that your old staff are not as capable as they should be in handling the bigger volume of work that has come to you. So there are all kinds of changes that take place during harvest time.
And if the transition is not made, the harvest will be missed.
I mean, harvest is lost many times on the harvest field. I mean, you go out there, the harvest time, and the harvest is lost because the harvester couldn't organize, mobilize to harvest. And then the rains come in again. The rain which helped to grow the harvest now comes in and destroys the harvest, and everything is wasted. So it's very strategic at harvest time. It's probably harder to harvest than to sow.
Sounds interesting.
You know, and following up on that, Jesus said in Matthew 9:37-38, he asked us to pray, asking the Lord of the harvest to send laborers because they were few. Can you expatiate on the Lord of the harvest and a little more on the laborers that are required during harvest time?
The Lord of the harvest is God. I mean, he controls the seasons. He opens the door. God is a faithful God. When we faithfully plow, he will faithfully honor what we have done in every area of our lives. So we have plowed. He has created the harvest for us. But he also tells us that in that harvest season, your human capabilities and capacity, staff capacity, will be critical to determine how you access your harvest field. So if the laborers are few, the harvest will be wasted. So many times when you start an organization, you start with faithful people, not necessarily competent people. Faithful people help you to start. They are loyal, they are there for you. But when the harvest comes, you realize sometimes that faithfulness may not be all that is required. And loyalty may be good, but loyalty cannot be a substitute for competence. So at that harvest time, the challenge of every harvester is, what do I do? Do I stay with the same people who have been with me? Because if I bring in new people, it would be like you use them at a point, and now that things are growing, you've abandoned them. It's always a very troubling idea for every leader. But Jesus says you need more laborers. So if Jesus said it, then it means that you have to, at that point, widen your scope. And sometimes the people who come in subsequently may be better qualified, but they weren't there when the seed was being sown. And people disparaged them. You waited till when it is cool. You are coming in. Where were you when we were suffering? But if they don't also come in, all the effort you have made at sowing will be wasted. So you bring in more capable people. And sometimes if it's an organization that pays salaries, you may pay them higher than those you started with. And it can create conflict. People can feel used and people can feel that they've not been cared for. I mean, there are things you can do with the people you started with, training them, exposing them. Some are able to grow with the organization, but unfortunately, some are not able to. Some, for whatever aptitudinal or attitudinal limitations, just are not able to catch on to the new things that are required when things have worked out.
I think this is something a lot of organizations face.
Yes.
Apart from training to try and upgrade some of those faithful people, how else can we kind of work around the conflict it creates?
It's very difficult. Some of these issues have no simple answers. You know, you are trying to reward those who have been faithful to you. You are also trying to take advantage of the new opportunities you have. And there's always a conflict. And if it's not managed well, then in handling those who have been faithful, you miss the great opportunity. Or in taking advantage of the great opportunity, you lose those who have been faithful. So there has to be a balancing act. Ideally, those who have been faithful should also be able to upgrade themselves and be able to have a new attitude towards what is happening. And if we don't have that, we will always use mediocre people in our harvest time, and the harvest will be shortchanged.
This is time with Pastor Tabula, and I'm learning that the harvest can be even more difficult than seed time. So if you're excited about the harvest, there's so much more you need to learn as we ask Pastor Tabula the questions about harvest time. Let's continue after the break. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Time with Pastor Otable, discussing today the seasons of life with a focus on harvest time. Pastor Kuyu?
Doc, in Exodus chapter 16, verse 4, God instructed the Israelites to harvest enough manna only for the day. What did he really mean then, and are there any lessons for us now?
I don't think that has a very wide application in terms of the harvest as we are talking now, because in the first place, they didn't sow the harvest and they were not reaping. This is God's generosity given to them. And God was telling them, if I'm giving you, trust me daily to provide for you. We cannot call that a harvest time. It will be divine provision. And we have to depend on the Lord to provide for us when we are in that season where he provides for us. And every day we just go out there and trust that God will provide for us. But when we have put in an effort, as they did later in the promised land, and there is a harvest, then we cannot just be very measured with the harvest. You have to bring in the harvest as quickly as possible in the most efficient manner. So when God opens a mighty door for you, you don't become shy about the door. You have to make the most of the opportunity that God has given to you.
Doc, let's stay with divine provision and the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus instructed that they gather the leftovers. How critical is it to preserve the gains of a harvest and avoid post-harvest losses?
I will not put that directly within the context of a harvest season as we are talking about. But there is an application there where Jesus teaches us that no matter the abundance you have, you must also be mindful not to be wasteful. So here, he blesses 5 loaves of bread, 2 fish. It feeds so many people. It looks like there's abundance. Everybody eats and there is leftover. And it's very easy when you are in abundance and there's leftover to be wasteful. And Jesus teaches us that in the midst of abundance, we don't have to be wasteful. And we have to preserve every piece. The Bible doesn't tell us what was gathered was used for. People have all kinds of conjectures as to what it was used for. But if we ended where it ended, the story ended, what it teaches us is don't be wasteful in abundance, that we take care of every little piece that we have when there's so much available to us.
Look, the principle of being wasteful in the midst of abundance, can that be likened to prodigality?
Yes, yes. Yeah, being wasteful, yes.
Doc, in the book of Judges chapter 6, it records that whenever the people of Israel sowed and it was time to harvest, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and other people of the east would come up and destroy the harvest and leave them impoverished. What are our greatest threats or biggest threats to the harvest?
I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, when you're sowing, when you're in a sowing season, almost everything is quiet and in the secret. After all, the seed is just a few seeds in your hands. You can actually hold the seeds in your pocket and sow a whole field. But when it's harvest, there's no secrecy. Everybody sees that your harvest has come. So everybody, including people you don't want to see your harvest. That means that harvest attracts enemies. It attracts jealousy. It attracts envy. It attracts fights and battles. It attracts all kinds of things. That's why I say that seed time is a bit easier because harvest time is also battle time because people want to take what you have worked for from you. When you are down, nobody wants to take anything from you. But when you begin to show results, then people want to take away from you. And in every field, even in the ministry, when you're a pastor and you're struggling and for years you're struggling, Nobody talks about you. Nobody hates you. The media doesn't bother about you. But then when things begin to show, that is when everybody's eyes are set on you. So in your harvest field, you have to also be careful and be mindful of the attention you are getting. And not all of the attention is positive attention. Some of it can be very destructive attention.
Doc, in Luke chapter 5, verse 5, Simon said that he had toiled all night but caught nothing. And then in John chapter 5, verse 7, the guy at the pool of Bethesda said, anytime he makes an effort to get into the pool, someone gets ahead of him. If you have had repeated experiences like this, what do you need to do? Because you get the impression that they have sowed, but they weren't getting their harvest.
Well, in Simon's case, God gave him direction. So if you have worked and worked and worked, and you're not getting results, there is probably divine insight that you must have as to what to do next. And he got a harvest. In the man at the pool who had tried, he also got a harvest, so to speak, by an instruction. Jesus told him, take up your bed and walk. So in each of these two instances, there was an information that was required to turn the cycle of failure around. And the cycle of failure can sometimes be in things we do. I mean, you toil and toil and toil and there is nothing. It doesn't mean nothing can be done, as we see in these two stories. Something can be done, but it comes with a new instruction, with a new information. It has been said that if you do the same things over and over again, hoping for different results, then you must be crazy, something to that effect. So, I mean, the fact that you have repeated failure is an indication that the information you are working with, the attitude you're working with, the space you're working in needs to change. And sometimes you need a divine intervention for that to change. And that's what Jesus brought to those.
It would seem like repeated failure can sometimes scar you to the point where even when the harvest comes, you still are cocooned. Because in the case that you mentioned, the man by the pool of Bethesda, even when Christ came with his harvest, he kept talking about the bad experience. Can the past sometimes just trap us from moving forward into the future?
Oh, sure. I mean, when you've been disappointed for so long, you don't want to be disappointed again. I mean, you've tried, you've gone for seminars, you've gone for workshops, you've tried and tried, and you come back, nothing happens, and then somebody comes with another solution. You are most likely to reject it. And sometimes you can reject what would have rescued you. And so in as much as we can, and I know it's difficult, but in as much as possible, failure should not make us negative. Failure should not dim our quest for success or for productivity or for fruitfulness. Because if it dims that quest, then your success may stand right in front of you and you'll reject it. So I can understand how doing the same thing and not getting result can make you abandon hope. But we must not abandon hope. We must determine to be hopeful. We must encourage ourselves. We must look for the brighter day. Because if truly what you have been doing is sincere, you've been working hard, you've been putting in your best effort, there should be result. There should be. And if it delays, you have to wait for it and you have to look for it. You have to look for that additional factor, something you must do to trigger the harvest for you. So sometimes it's just one last something that must happen. You know, when I was a kid, there was something I noticed about mangoes. I mean, everybody in my neighborhood at my age loved mangoes. And there was a mango tree behind our house, that was a community mango tree. Everybody, all the kids time it to see which mangoes are ripe. And then we climb up and try to beat somebody. And what I noticed was, you know, sometimes you can, like today, all the mangoes can be green on the tree. And then it rains in the night and you wake up, the first kid to wake up and go, realize so many of the mangoes are ripe. But before then, the mango would say, I've toiled and toiled and toiled and nothing is happening. Just one factor changes everything. And that just to show that sometimes you can be there repeatedly in the same place doing nothing. And then one factor changes everything. Like the stories of Jesus that we've talked about. So that one factor sometimes is a bit unpredictable. You can't tell, but it could be just one factor. One factor, one direction, one choice you make, somebody who comes into your life changes your story all of a sudden. And every part of your years of toil begins to bear fruit.
It makes sense.
One factor.
Wow.
I will remember.
You must trust God for that one factor.
Yes, yes, yes.
Staying with mongoose. Now, what were children? It almost seemed like anytime you didn't want to wait for the mango to mature and you climbed earlier than scheduled, pursuing the green mangoes, not only will red ants bite you, but the mango too, when you pluck it prematurely, will lacerate your tongue.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a premature harvest?
I believe so. I believe so. And normally we do that when we lose patience and we don't allow the process to play out fully. Or we see somebody's harvest has come and we want ours to come. So you find people who sometimes put unnecessary pressure on themselves and want to manifest what they consider their harvest time. So they take steps that hurt them in the future. So we must be patient in waiting. That time comes. And sometimes you can also be very bitter. Sometimes it happens to pastors, you know, you pastor a group of people for a long time, nothing's happening, and then somebody's church is doing well. Then you start harassing your church members and putting pressure on them to do things for you, or you become very bitter and very critical and very condemnatory in your message. And what you're doing is you're worsening a bad case, because the people are not the problem. You know, they need encouragement, not discouragement. The same with the business. I mean, you're working hard and the business is not going on. Then you go into, you know, tirades and rants and get to the office and blast everybody and be angry with everybody and demoralize your workforce. Well, you're making a bad case worse. I mean, when things are tough, that is when you need motivation. That's when you need encouragement. So if a general is in the army leading a troop and the troop is suffering losses, that's not the time you come and say you are the worst soldiers I've ever worked with. No, you motivate them and inspire them to go and fight. So that's what we do. The temptation is to pull them down, but at that time, everybody needs encouragement to go and fight.
Jeremiah said in Jeremiah 8:20, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. How can the door be permanently shut to a particular harvest?
It could be. I mean, it's harvest season may pass because probably you didn't sow in the sowing season. Just because it's a harvest season doesn't mean you should harvest, because you only harvest if you sowed in the sowing season. So if, for example, you go to a corn farm and the corn has grown, that what has grown was sown by somebody. The person who didn't sow, although it's a season of harvest, will reap nothing. So sometimes people miss a sowing season. And they miss the harvest as well. If somebody doesn't have mercy on them, they miss the harvest as well. So sometimes it's possible for us not to have done what we should have done at the time we should have done them, and then we expect salvation. We expect help. We expect that, well, things should work. You know, like people say, life begins at 40. But you can be 40 and miserable if 21, you didn't make the right choices. And 22, you didn't make the right choices. Then 40 by itself will not solve your problems. Age doesn't solve anybody's problem. It is the investments you made before that age. Education, your work experience, financial responsibility, all of these steps you took. If you married, treating your spouse well and building a good marriage, taking good care of your children. Then when you grow up, your old age becomes enjoyable. Your children are grown and they love you because you took care of them and they take care of you. Your investments, which you started when you were 21, are now ripe when you are 60 and you go and cash them in. But if you don't take those steps, you'll still be 60, the harvest would have come, and you are not saved. So at the time when you should be enjoying, you wouldn't be enjoying.
Somebody said when you are 40, life doesn't begin. You have reached the afternoon of your life. You know, when people say life begins at 40. So
yes,
beginning early is very critical,
yes,
as you said.
It's very important.
This is time with Pastor Otable discussing today the harvest time, and some very, very interesting insights are coming out, including the fact that the harvest is not automatic. Something must be done to elicit the harvest. Let's go for another break. When we come back, let's bring to Pastor Otable the questions you've been sending to him in the past couple of weeks. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Time with Pastor Otable, discussing today the seasons of life with an emphasis on harvest time. Just a reminder that you can send your questions for the attention of Pastor Otable using the number on your screen by WhatsApp, and we'll be happy to ask him in subsequent editions. Pastor, could you?
Doc, Abraham Hansen has a question for you. He said, Reverend Otable, what are some of the indicators of one seasons of life? How do you know that the challenges you are facing are part of God's processes for your life and not a mistake you made?
Well, I suppose if you made a mistake, you know you made a mistake, isn't it? I mean, if you made a mistake, you know you made a mistake.
Yeah.
And the mistake is what is causing you that. But, you know, as Christians, even when we make mistakes, unfortunately, and the mistakes have consequences, God still uses all things to work together for our good. So for the Christian, there's nothing like a loss. Even our mistakes become a process that God will use. So yes, you may have made mistakes, but it doesn't consign you to a permanent state of failure. God is able to use all of these as lessons, as stepping stones for you into something else that you should be doing with your life. So mistakes are there, but mistakes are not the finality of the outcomes of our life. How do you know this is God's seasons? First, you have to trust God that He holds your life in His hand, that He holds your days in His hand. David says that He has written the days of our lives. So it means that every day of my life has been accounted for by God. And there is nothing I go through that God is ignorant of. And if I live a life of surrender to him, then he uses my days to work out his purposes. So one of the things we have to do is to trust God and to live a life of surrender to him whilst we are working and making all the effort to trust him, that he's the one who determines the outcomes of our life. One way to determine what season you are in is the frequency of events happening. When you see something happening just more frequently in your life, it's almost as if your life is within a certain space where certain things are happening more frequently. That may indicate that this is a season of your life, and you need to be mindful of it, be prayerful about it. And if you can seek counsel about it, how to manage that phase of your life well, so that you don't mismanage the opportunities that God will give to you in that season. Even when we are in the valley, God makes opportunities available to us.
Of the harvest that we experience, is it always as a result of our effort?
Well, Jesus told his disciples that he's sending them to harvest that they didn't, to fields they didn't sow, to reap where they haven't sown. So just like there are generational consequences, there are harvests we have that we didn't sow. I mean, if somebody builds a chocolate factory in Ghana today, yes, they've put in a lot of effort to do the chocolate factory, but they've reaped Tete Kwashi's effort. So this is somebody making an effort that now accrues to you. So thank God somebody was there earlier and made the right choices that have benefited you. So it happens to all of us where people's efforts benefit us in so many areas of our lives.
Dr. Frank has a question about COVID-19. He says, COVID, can we say it is the work of God? Was God taking the whole world through a wilderness?
I don't have the competence to answer that question. What I can say is I don't know the mind of God regarding COVID. I think it's something that has happened. My view is that God uses it for his glory. The fact that God uses something for his glory doesn't mean he causes it. Even when Satan plans, God can use it for his glory. So I don't know where it came from. As of now, we don't know whether it's from a lab or from a bat. Or a bat in a lab. But wherever it came from, whether it was bad choices we made, irresponsible human actions, whatever it is. As a Christian, my point is to trust God that in every situation, he'll reveal his glory.
He mentions wilderness. Just for the benefit of our viewers, wilderness in this context would mean a prolonged season of uncertainty, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, is the world in a wilderness state? I don't know. I mean, there was a time when we could say that the world was going through hardship, but some countries have come out, some are struggling. Different scenarios are playing out all over the world. I don't, if I will hazard a statement, I don't think God brought the COVID to take the world through a wilderness experience.
Catherine is asking, is temptation a part of our life seasons? If yes, how do we handle it?
Temptation is when something, your lust, lead you to pursue something that gets you into trouble. But a trial is many times when God brings something your way to help you to get to the next level of our life. It's almost like what happens in a test when we go to school. You learn a lesson, you are tested based on what you've learned. And then hopefully you are promoted, not demoted, or not stay in the same class. So when God has taught us so much, he's going to test us. I mean, you go to church and hear all these messages. Your pastor is preaching and emphasizing something and how to trust God and how to believe God and how to pray. How are you going to learn how to do those things? God has to throw circumstances your way that will require you to use what he has taught you. And that's why he will not test us beyond what we are able. He tests us based on what we are able. Why are we able? Because he's already taught us what to do in those circumstances. And if we just trust what he has taught us, then we'll be able to overcome those circumstances.
Dr. Daniel has a question. His question is that, please, how can one identify his seed? And the second question is that, can one identify his seed and still struggle with it?
How can one identify his seed? There are different things to be used to discover your seed. First, you have to look at your predominant strength, the things that you have strength in, the things that you have passion for, you love. Because sometimes you're strong in something, but you don't love it. So things that you love. And then things that you've received some training in. It's a strength. It's something we call it talent. You love it. You've been trained in it. And sometimes it's observable. If it's there, it's observable because people see that you have a talent or you have a strength in this area. So these are some things that people can use to discover what their seed is or what their talent is. And I suppose he uses this seed in terms of talent. Can you discover that and still struggle? Yes. Yes. Because the seed must be sown. And during seed time, it's struggle time. Because there's no harvest. So there's nothing, no result for you to benefit from. So you will struggle in a seed time. And then a harvest will come. But you can also struggle because although you know these talents, you are not really paying attention to them. So you can know that this is your gift. If you don't pay attention to them, you will struggle. It could also be that there are other competing interests around you, fighting your talent from manifesting. If you're a footballer, and you don't get a selection, then in Bukum 11, you definitely can't play for Chelsea.
Yeah.
So all these processes have to work for you to overcome them at a lower level, and then you see manifestation at a higher level.
Look, talking about football and not getting selection, can you pray that your competitor be put aside and you put into the team? Is it a good prayer?
I don't think it's a good prayer. I think you can pray for God's favor. And when God favors you, it means he shines his eyes on you, and he pays attention to you and he selects you and he favorably positions you. So instead of somebody being taken out, I mean, if that's going to happen, that has to be God's job to do that. But I don't think you should pray that because then it will veer into covetousness and coveting what somebody has and all of that. So your prayer will be amiss. We just pray for God's favor and he determines how to favor us.
So can a harvest destroy you?
Unfortunately, it can because sometimes we do well in scarcity and then abundance just messes us up. Sometimes we do well in obscurity and popularity just brings the worst out of you. So some people are better off on the quiet than becoming big because being out there has it's a huge responsibility. How to manage yourself, how to manage people who are against you, how to manage, how do you treat people who are below you. All of these can, if not managed well, can hurt you. So your harvest season could end up destroying you.
We have Thomas AJ with another question. He says, if I planted my good seed and it produced fruits and my siblings very dear and expect help from me. What should I do?
I don't want to solve their sibling problems. I think it's probably a direct question, and the siblings may be watching it. And I don't want the siblings to say Pastor Otterville sides with our sibling and not us. All I can say is sometimes God blesses you, and you have to also be generous. Joseph was blessed, but he shared the blessing with people who hurt him, his brothers. So part of our Christian responsibility is to be kind and to be generous, even to people who have abused responsibility.
Or blown their harvest.
you can't be God over your siblings. I mean, if God has been good to bless you and bless your effort, you're not the one to judge them and punish them for how they've used their lives. You do what you have to do as a good brother and sister and as a good Christian.
Can two people start life on the same queue, same graduation, everything, and then one be at harvest time and yet the other person be at seed time? Can two people who are together be in very different seasons of their lives?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I mean, because this is not chronological. It's not based on who is my classmate, who is my mate, who is my twin brother. Husband and wife can be in two different seasons of their lives. So, because it all depends. First, there are the larger factors, but also there are choices we are making that is leading us one way or the other. And the fact that we are close doesn't mean we are making the same choices. So you can be close to somebody and be in a different season from them. You can be a sibling to somebody and be in a different season. Sometimes you can see friends. One friend does very well early in their 20s. He blossoms because he starts early. And then one comes up and probably in his 50s starts blossoming, by which time the one who blossomed early is probably retreating. So, you know, there are all kinds of dynamics to these things. So.
And God deals with that differently.
God deals with that differently. And I think the whole idea of comparing with people and trying to be like them and trying to have what they have can hurt us, can pierce us with a lot of dissatisfaction and anger and frustration and all of that against people. Because sometimes you just feel life has not been fair to you. People have not been fair to you. You feel cheated. Then you blame people. Then you're going to blame your parents that they love one sibling more than the other. And, you know, so you get into all this bitter expression, which doesn't help you yourself to find your own expression. Because who knows, maybe you're going to blossom later on and things are going to work so well for you. But you can abort that with your bitterness.
A big thank you to you, Dr. Otterville, for what has been an amazing discussion about harvest time. So understanding the seasons was great. Then we went to seed time, then to waiting, and to harvest. And I'm sure that our viewers have had a wonderful breath of instruction to help them navigate their way into the future. A big thank you to you, sir, for these insights. Thank you, Pastor Kojo, for your contribution. It's been amazing, hasn't it?
It's been great.
Wow.
Exceptional.
Pastor Priscilla, thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
Dr. For our viewers out there, they are listening with rapt attention for how to wrap up on this subject of the seasons of life. What will be your closing thoughts and a prayer for them as well?
I mean, what I want to emphasize is that in a harvest season, as Jesus says, pray the Lord of the harvest to give you laborers. The most critical factor you need in a harvest season is the right kind of people. The right kind of people to step into your life. They may not have been there earlier, but they need to step into your life at the time when things are beginning to work for you. You need their wisdom. You need their expertise. You need their guidance. for you to manage this big phase of your life that has come. So I pray for everyone that in your harvest season, God will bring you the right kind of people, that the Lord will surround you with people of wisdom, people of expertise and competence, people of goodwill, people who have you at heart, and people who know how to harvest the field that God has given to you. And may the Lord bring them your way from all parts of the world. And may the Lord give you discernment, so when they come, your hearts will be open to these laborers that God has sent to help you in your harvest field. We pray for wisdom, for discernment, and for understanding of what to do at this season of your life. In Jesus' name, amen.